WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
It's been a year filled with sudden changes for my guest, Reverend Jerry Falwell. Through his group, The Moral Majority, Falwell forged the religious right into an organized political force. Earlier this month, Falwell stepped down from The Moral Majority. He said he was leaving politics to get back to basics, preaching and evangelizing, and to devote his energy to his television show, The Old Time Gospel Hour, to his Thomas Road Baptist Church, Liberty Baptist College, and other related projects. Falwell's withdrawal from The Moral Majority came on the heels of his resignation from the PTL Club. He assumed leadership of the PTL television ministry after its head, Jim Baker, admitted to an extramarital sexual encounter he had with Jessica Hahn and had paid her hush money. This scandal sent shockwaves throughout the electronic churches, and television ministers are still assessing the damage. These recent changes in Falwell's life coincide with the publication of his autobiography, Strength for the Journey, just published by Simon & Schuster. Jerry Falwell, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
Stepping down from The Moral Majority, in a way, completes a full cycle for you. Back in 1965, you made
a speech.
You preached a sermon, thank you, saying that you didn't think politics belonged in the pulpit. But after abortion was legalized, you decided to get into politics and eventually form The Moral Majority, and now you've withdrawn from politics again. What were your reasons for it?
Well, after 8 years of organizing the religious right, registering several million persons to vote, we've been able also to train a lot of leadership. Many are pastors, many are not. And whereas one person was needed in 1979, perhaps, the early 80s, I think that, and I made this clear over a year ago that I was moving in this direction, that my involvement in the presidency of that organization, day-to-day administrative responsibilities, traveling a couple hundred thousand miles annually, lobbying and stumping for candidates like Ronald Reagan, et cetera, really needed to come to an end because I am first and foremost a pastor, a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am a chancellor of Liberty University and pastor of Thomas Road Baptist Church, and with a new president in place and the Moral Majority stronger than ever, it was an excellent time for me to step aside, and I have done it.
I figure, in a way, you probably didn't plan on this because it was only last year that you organized the Liberty Federation, which was an umbrella group for you to expand into international issues.
January of 86, in addition to Moral Majority, we did form the Liberty Federation, right, with a broader agenda than more or less the Reagan agenda. And both organizations are well-staffed with offices in Washington and Lynchburg, Virginia. I announced last fall, October 86, that I would be pulling away from active day-to-day involvement, and we waited a year till the fiscal year was over, August 31, just passed, and saw that the revenues were up, not down, that it wasn't dependent on Jerry Falwell, as once it might have been. And we feel very good about what has been done, but we feel much better about getting back to the pulpit.
I think a lot of Americans have seen the religious right as a unanimous group, people who agree on all of the issues, who agree on who the candidates should be. And there's recently been some fragmentation within that group. I'm thinking, for instance, that you supported George Bush for the presidency.
I do.
And Pat Robertson, who is one of the best known of the television ministers, is
a candidate.
A candidate himself, right. And I'm sure he would have preferred that you supported him.
And he's a friend, and there are four good friends of mine who are Republican candidates. Bob Dole is an excellent candidate, as is Jack Kemp. Probably Jack Kemp would be, along with Pat Robertson, would enjoy a closer kinship with the religious right. And I like all four of them, and you'd find that the religious right today, at this point, would be divided among those four candidates because, number one, of their philosophies, each of them, and number two, the Republican platform.
Do you think that Pat Robertson's candidacy has, in a way, caused a crisis for the politicized evangelical community? Because now they have to choose between the Republican Party candidates or Pat Robertson?
I think it'll be more of a maturing thing than a damaging thing. I think that Pat Robertson will be very good for the Republican Party after the convention. After the nominee is in place, he will do for the Republicans what I think Jesse Jackson has done and is doing for the Democrats. He will bring in a different universe, a new universe, and he will, in my opinion, find himself supporting very aggressively whoever that nominee is.
Nevertheless, do you think that now the Republican Party feels betrayed by Pat Robertson and
probably.
His supporters because instead
yes,
of
probably.
Giving the moral majority support?
And I personally, and as a friend of Pat, I can say this without it sounding wrong. My druthers are that no ordained minister would run for public office. I thought Mr. Edgar would have been better to remain as a Methodist minister. I thought Father Drinan would have been best in the priesthood. Jesse Jackson, Pat Robertson. It is an issue of whether they can. They certainly have the right to do it. But I personally think you lose something when you run for office. I think you lose your vantage point of unbiased positions on issues and without ulterior motives. My druthers are, I wish they had not run. I think it does create a little problem for us on the right, and I'm sure Pat knows that.
Did it diminish your power base in a way, since there, you know, you probably lost some of your support, the people who were supporting Pat Robertson?
I don't think so. It's a different breed. The person who is interested in and supports a religious ministry and the person who supports a political candidate are almost two different animals entirely, and I have not noticed any crossover either way.
My guest is Reverend Jerry Falwell, who has just written an autobiography titled Strength for the Journey. I know that you're very proud of the role that you and your group, the Moral Majority, played in the electing of Ronald Reagan to the presidency. And I'd just be interested in briefly in hearing your reaction to the Iran-Contra scandal and the revelations that were brought by the congressional committee that investigated it.
Well, obviously, this is a nation of laws, not emotions and feelings and people. And while I'm a very strong supporter of Ronald Reagan, and I very much like Colonel North and Admiral Poindexter, and I like their commitment to the country. Obviously, they had a dilemma, a Congress that did not want to support the president's policy in Central America, and their own desire to support the president's policy. And obviously, they went against the will of the Congress, and that has been shown. And I think that cases have been made that laws have been broken, or at least they will certainly be made. I'm also reading today that there will be perhaps some pardons, presidential pardons in the making. I don't know that. I just read it like anyone else. It is a dilemma. I think while I am very supportive of the president's policy, I think the president was embarrassed, and there are some who would feel that he was involved. I do not. I would take the position that although perhaps he should have known, I would take the position that he did not know, and I would exonerate him of any wrongdoing, and I think that's what the congressional report did in fact say. Bad judgment call, but not a breaking of the law. I think it did hurt him. I think that it was, I have a strong feeling about the Congress not doing what they should do, but that does not permit the abrogation of the law.
The committee suggested that he was guilty of letting this happen in his administration, even if he didn't know that it was happening, that he it's his duty to make sure that all constitutional laws are
And I think all the surveys show that's where the American people are.
Did you lose any faith in the president through these revelations?
No, not at all. I was sorry to see Ed Meese and Jim Baker leave the troika that in the first term were at the president's right hand every moment. I certainly think Mr. Reagan and now Howard Baker are fine men. But I somehow felt that James Baker and Ed Meese, particularly those two, were constantly looking out for the president's well-being. And I don't think they would have allowed this bungling to have occurred had they been there.
Reverend Jerry Falwell is my guest. We were just talking about how the Pat Robertson campaign is affecting the power of the religious right. What about the PTL scandal? Do you think that that has tainted the credibility of other leaders in the religious right? Do you think that the after effects, that the shock waves from that scandal is tainting
three
other
things
people?
In
yeah.
the last the last 24 months, about three things I think have hurt most in the evangelical camp. One, the growing awareness that Pat Robertson would probably run for the presidency. There are many evangelicals, like myself who have a deep love for Pat Robertson and appreciation for him and his ability and his prowess and his background, etc., who would have preferred he did not run. And I think there are many out there who feel very strongly, so strongly that they won't financially support a ministry because of that. Secondly, the Oral Roberts fundraising death wish, death threat thing I thought was very debilitating to credibility. And then, of course, the Jim Baker sex and money scandal at PTL. I've used the term Watergate. It has sort of a Watergate effect. It's a paralyzing effect right now because everything that the Elmer Gantry story in fiction was, this is better if you're a movie producer than that because it has all that intrigue, and unfortunately, it's so. I watched Ted Koppel on Nightline recently with Mr. Baker, The Last Encounter, 1 hour of brutality. And Ted Koppel is not given to brutality. He is a very objective journalist, but I could see him in his eyes and his voice a total disgust because his last question after all of the 1 hour of painful interrogation, his last question was, Mr. Baker, what kind of role model do you think you have been for Christianity? Powerful question. And with that, he went off the air. That is how people are thinking across this country and are wondering, is anybody honest? What about Billy Graham? Maybe he's a fraud. Maybe Falwell's a fraud. Maybe Charles Stanley. Maybe my pastor. Maybe where I go to church, I'd better check. And just that little question mark has caused revenues to be down for organizations like the Salvation Army. What possible connection? And such ministers right across the nation. It is a national paralysis of giving and trust, and I think we've got 2 or 3 years of that to endure before it's history.
You became involved in the future of PTL because when Jim Baker stepped down, you took over the ministry, and then you eventually resigned from PTL. Now, you had heard rumors right before the story actually broke that Jim Baker was involved in this mm-hmm. sex scandal. You had a brief meeting with him in a hotel room before
first
the story broke.
First and only ever with him.
Your first in-person
meeting I've ever had with him and the only one.
Now, what did he tell you at the meeting?
He told me when I asked him about the rumors, yes, 7 years ago, an event did occur. He called it an encounter. He said that John Wesley Fletcher, a fellow evangelist and co-worker of his, had brought his former babysitter from New York to Florida to meet him during a time when his wife, Tammy Faye, had left him and was threatening never to come back. He said, I was just trying to make her jealous. I did not have sex with Jessica. If anything, she tried to rape me, but I was impotent. That was what he said. When I asked, did you use PTL funds for hush money? He said, I did not. I used my own funds. And later he advised me that he felt the Assemblies of God were going to defrock him, the denomination, and they did, and that there was a 2-year restoration period in which he could be reaccepted into the Pentecostal ministry there. After 6 hours, and he had already asked me to become the chairman, and by the way, he alone could not do that. His full board met the next night unanimously, choosing a new board now of 10 persons, and they accordingly resigned. A blue ribbon panel that was put together very quickly. He asked me as I was about to leave Palm Springs, the hotel, do you think, Jerry, I could ever come back maybe in a year, 2 years to PTL? And I remembered very emphatically saying to him, Jim, if what you've told me is true, and also if you are restored to the pastor, the ministry, by the Assemblies of God, and if the people want you at PTL, I would never stand in your way. Our commitment was to a 1-year tenure there. We had our board decided we will give it 1 year. We will not be paid. We will do the best we can. Win or lose, we walk in 1 year. That would have been next March. We only made 6.5 months. And when it became obvious to us that the court was leaning towards some pro-Baker people on the board, and the door was not totally slammed to the return of Mr. Baker. We later learned in weeks that followed so many things that told us as a board we not only must restore the ministry, but guarantee Mr. Baker does not return. When we learned that we could not be assured of that latter goal, we quietly walked out.
On one level, I was almost surprised when you accepted the chairmanship of PTO.
So was my wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are such a different
yes.
kind of preacher mm-hmm. and leader than Jim Baker is. For instance, first of all, you're from different religious denominations. Mm-hmm. And second of all, just in terms of your television ministries, mm-hmm. you're totally opposite. You have a very—
We're teaching, preaching, education. Their thing is entertainment and fun and Hollywood.
Well, yeah, your service is basically taped in your church, and it's
yes.
a very large church.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jim and Tammy Baker show was much more
yes.
showbiz, much mm-hmm. more entertainment-oriented. And I wonder why you wanted to get involved in it.
Really only one reason. The ministry, a mammoth one, although totally different than anything Billy Graham, a Jerry Falwell, a Charles Stanley, a Jim Kennedy might be involved in, is in the eye of the general public one member of a monolithic community. That's not true, but that is the perception. And if it were allowed to collapse and hundreds of millions of dollars lost and people hurt, there was no way it could not create a terrific negative backwash on everybody, which in fact has happened. We didn't know, of course, the depth of the problems and the depravity of the situation. We probably would not have taken it had we known that. But knowing what we knew, we felt we could conserve the ministry and we could perhaps put it in good hands and leave there. And everybody would say, well, the Christian family had a problem. They solved their own problem. They met their obligations. And I guess you'd say a controlled crash landing is what we hoped to have. That did not occur. And there has been a very, very bad fallout that will be longstanding.
Well, I want to talk to you about that fallout, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is Reverend Jerry Falwell, who recently stepped down as the president of the Moral Majority and as the chair of PTL. He's written an autobiography which is titled Strength for the Journey. We'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Reverend Jerry Falwell. Now, right before our break, you were talking about the fallout from the mm-hmm. PTL scandal. I'd like to know specifically what the fallout has been in your ministry. You rely on the public for fundraising money, and you also get so much in the way of mail and phone calls that I bet you have some pretty good ways of registering if there's been any lack of faith in the television ministry.
A national ministry, and there are probably six or eight of them, is much like a national corporation as far as feeling national pulse. The first and by far the most important fallout has been the testimonial and the credibility problem. A lot of people have had their personal faith damaged. I think of young people, teenagers. I think of a lot of persons who, as skeptics, have been approaching Christianity very cautiously but carefully, moving towards Christianity, have been set back light years. I meet them everywhere who are saying, I'll never go to church again, or I would never help any Christian ministry again. That's been the most important thing. Secondly, economically, as best I can tell, and I share notes with other ministers across the country and major churches, there's been about a 20% softness in support. That is very significant, Of all the churches in this country, and I don't know what I think it's like $80 billion given a year to charities, universities, churches, ministries, $80 billion. 20% of that, or one-fifth of that, is $16 billion. I think when the year's history and someone has taken the time to compute what has happened, it will be about that. I would say that this has hurt the universities, the churches, the schools, the various mercy ministries to hurting people out there. I think the credibility thing has so financially damaged ministries that we will be probably 5 years getting over it. In our own ministry, we're just a minuscule part of it with a $100 million annual budget, which is hardly something to gauge the multi-billion dollar problem. But in our own ministry, we have in about 5 months lost about $5 million from that area, meaning we had to quickly adjust to it. And just like you in National Public Radio, if you don't get it, you just got to stop doing some things. And it just frankly has hurt us. And I haven't met anyone that it has not hurt.
There is very little in the way of accountability for television ministers now. And you yourself in your autobiography write that traditionally TV ministers don't answer to anyone. They don't, I'm talking about the fundamentalist ministers, they don't have a larger denomination frequently that they're answering to. And they answer to their board, but the people on their board are frequently loyalists, loyal to the head of the TV ministry. So consequently, there's very little in the way of accountability or of checks and balances or anything like that. You must be very concerned about this now. Do you have any suggestions? Are you and your colleagues trying to figure out ways of holding people accountable so that their scandals no longer will impact on your ministries?
Without a doubt. The Southern Baptist Convention, for example, the largest Protestant denomination, is a group of 34,000 really independent churches. Then you have many other denominations in the country and fellowships of churches. Probably a third of the churches in America have no responsibility to a hierarchy. That is not all bad. In many cases, that is good. But in this area, it has been a factor. Then you go beyond that to the television and radio ministries, most of which are evangelical and fundamentalist. The best known ones, as I've mentioned, Billy Graham, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Jimmy Swaggart, Charles Stanley. But there are hundreds of lesser known ones whose names you might not know, but who are out there and doing quite a work. Most of them belong, 75%, to the national religious broadcasters. And 1 year ago, before PTL, the board of directors, of which I am a member, Dr. Ben Armstrong, our executive director, decided we need inside this organization a better business bureau type organization and make it mandatory for membership in NRB. Well, we got some flack on that, and we had a problem getting a majority vote. One reason is the First Amendment. Who's the government to be telling us what we can and cannot do? On the other side was the desire for openness, accountability. And when PTL exploded in late March, it was, on the positive side, the catalyst we needed to press on with this new organization. It's called EFICOM, EFICOM, Ethics and Financial Integrity Commission. The board now has approved it by an overwhelming majority, over two-thirds vote. It's a large board, about 90 members. And this January, the entire rank-and-file membership will vote on it. My opinion, a two-thirds, maybe three-fourths vote will pass. At that time, in order to be a member of NRB, now, admittedly, you don't have to be a member of NRB, but if you belong to National Religious Broadcasters, which is a very credible and 40-year-old organization, automatically you must meet the standards of EFICOM. And that is like the ABA for the lawyers and AMA for the doctors, a self-policing kind of thing. It does not in any way guard against fraud. It probably would not have prevented PTL from occurring. It probably, you know, it won't prevent a person who is given to dishonesty from doing something. Only the authorities can stop that. But it will be a seal, a good housekeeping kind of seal to the general public that if a person does not belong to NRB without any blackballing, it says something to the donor. Maybe he doesn't want to be accountable.
I'm sure that you've had to really reassess your life and your goals in the light of resigning from the moral majority, in the light of the PTL scandal. It had been one of your goals to really influence the politics of our nation. You've withdrawn from being active in the political arena now. What about your concerns about the social and political agenda in America? Are you going to still preach those issues from the pulpit?
Yes. I will not. My removal from the presidency and my placement of Dr. Jerry Nims as the new president simply means three things. One, day-to-day administrative duties are no longer mine. Two, I will not be traveling a couple hundred thousand miles a year, most of the time devoted to political lobbying and stumping for candidates like Ronald Reagan, et cetera. And three, I will not be in Washington half the time attempting to bring about the goals and ideals that have been mine. I've been registering millions of voters and training thousands of pastors and leaders. Others will be doing it. The organization is stronger than ever. But my thing will be from henceforth, as chairman of the board, I will certainly have something to do with policy. I will certainly be speaking on the issues. George Bush asked me the day after I resigned, what does this mean? I said, well, it just means that that I won't be out there involved. I'm still for you. I still will speak on behalf of you. I believe in you. But I'll not make one speech or make one trip, as I did for Mr. Reagan, to carry that forth. And he understands that. But it's I'm 54 years old. I'm a husband and a daddy of three kids and who are growing out fast. And pastor of 22,000 church members and a chancellor of Liberty University with 8,000 students. That's where I want to spend the rest of my life.
Did you feel at all used by the politicians who you supported, that they wanted you for the votes that you could get but didn't necessarily wholeheartedly endorse your full social and political agenda?
No, I didn't, because I went in with my eyes wide open. I'm fully aware that the Republican platform, which we helped carve, was a necessary thing for some of the gentlemen who don't necessarily agree to it. Ronald Reagan is not one of them. But there are a lot of Republicans who consider the economic conservatives and the political conservatives and the religious conservatives a necessary but tenuous coalition for election to a national office. I'm not disillusioned by thinking that everybody in the Republican Party agrees with our philosophy. I know they can't win without us, and I know that they know that. And so I know that whoever the Republican candidate is come next August, that person will be knocking on the door of all these people because they need to keep the Reagan coalition together. I think one thing we have learned, of course, I think we've matured as the black church in the 50s in the civil rights movement was first an anathema and now a part of the fabric. We are likewise becoming a part of the fabric, and I think that we'll be stronger in 88 than we were in 84 or in 80.
We only have a couple of seconds left, but that means that you think that in spite of everything that's happened to the religious right this year, that you think that it hasn't been, lost its strength.
No, November 88, more persons will vote for, in my opinion, the Republican candidate, whomever it is, than voted for Reagan.
We're out of time. I want to thank you very much for talking with us. My guest has been Reverend Jerry Falwell, who recently stepped down as president of the Moral Majority and as the head of the PTL Club. He's just written an autobiography. It's titled Strength for the Journey, and it's just been published by Simon & Schuster. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.